You are listening to a sermon by Henry Neufeld, recorded on Sunday, November 27, 2016, at the Point Grey Intermennonite Fellowship in Vancouver, British Columbia. The recording also includes comments by Frieda Epp on her painting, If the War Goes On. The opinions expressed by the speakers are not necessarily those of the church. This recording is licensed for personal use by individuals only, and may not be copied, broadcast, or redistributed without the prior permission of the church board. For more information, please visit our website at www.pgimf.org.
Thank you. Two warnings. One is, you already heard the warning about using technology from another century, a projector. I mentioned that to somebody last Sunday, and they said, oh, I think I saw one in a museum once. The other warning is that this talk is so long, it's going to be done in two parts. And we'll have a break in the middle. Well, it's already been said that Advent and refugees have one thing in common, and that is waiting. Waiting for the fulfillment of prophecies, waiting for the Messiah. The Greek word for Advent describes a visitation of God, or the coming and arrival of a king as he travels about his realm. A visitation of God. We are called to wait so that we can be surprised by Christ's coming. And Christ comes to us in the form of the person beside us every day. Barclay says, Advent describes a healing and correcting visitation, a healing and correcting vision for us and for refugees. Well, refugees wait for solutions to their uncertain future. They wait for interviews with officials so they can get lodging and food cards. They wait for interviews with foreign government officials to provide hope for their future. They wait for medical and security clearance, the final hurdle that will give them a chance for a new life. Waiting is good for us because it reminds us that we are not in control. We are basically an impatient lot. The other day I wondered what the word estuary meant. Well, very simple. Went to the computer and got the definition. No wait. In some churches, parishioners check the preacher's facts on their handheld device during the sermon. No waiting. We can roast the preacher almost immediately. At our congregational meeting, if you want to know what the law is about charitable donations or something else, Kevin will find it very quickly on his handheld device. We don't have to wait much. A few weeks ago, in this chapel, I saw two people checking their handheld devices. Maybe they were turning off the beeper, I don't know. Well, in this season of waiting, there are 50 million people who are displaced, who are asylum seekers, the most since World War II. They wait and they wonder about their future. Refugees wonder, will I be able to go home? If I go home, will there be peace in my homeland? How long will I be stuck in the refugee camp? Will I pass the medical exam? Waiting and hope go together. Now, it's been said by someone a lot smarter than me that if you're going to do theology, you should have the Bible in one hand and a newspaper or an iPad in the other. Our reading of Scripture should be informed by what is going on in our world. Wars, natural disasters, famines, finances, politics are all subjects which need our attention. Now, a couple words about the different kinds of refugees. There are refugees from natural disasters. Fort McMurray earlier this year had a fire. 80,000 people had to leave their homes in a matter of days. It's due to a natural disaster, hurricanes, earthquakes, floods, fires. There are economic migrants. Many people want to come to Western countries because of poverty and unemployment. They seek jobs and opportunities for themselves and their children. Most of our ancestors came to Canada because of a mixture of political and economic factors. They wanted a better life for themselves and their children. There are war refugees. War is a very good reason to flee. The Syrians are an example of people simply wanting to be away from the dangers of bombs, drones, gas attacks. Many of these folks would like to return to the homeland when it is safe to do so. And a number of the Bosnians that were sponsored by Canadians some years ago have returned home because it's safe there now. And earlier this month, UNHCR was preparing accommodation for 1 million evacuees from Mosul because a major assault on that city was being planned. Now, that boggles my mind. We've been in camps that have over 200,000 people, five times that amount, a million people. Mind-boggling. Then there are convention refugees. Following World War II, there were millions of people drifting around Europe, not quite knowing where to go and where was the best place to be. An international convention was met to define a refugee. And convention refugees are people who live in fear of persecution. And persecution is serious intentional harm. And this is due to their religion, their race, their nationality, or their political opinion. Refugees, convention refugees, really don't have a choice. For their own safety, they have to leave. The best classic example are the Jews in Germany, because there was nothing a Jewish person could do if they were identified to prevent persecution. So if they could leave, they should. And it's interesting that in 1938, 20,000 Jewish children were sent away from Hitler's regime. Britain, USA, and Canada were reluctant to take any Jews at that time. But public opinion forced some change. And there were between 9,000 and 10,000 children that went to Britain with the hope that one day they would be reunited with their parents, Jewish children. But that, of course, didn't happen because of what happened to the parents. Now, this action took place largely because of Quakers and other Christians advocating for these kids. Once you have a refugee, there's only three things that can happen. The person can go back home, they can be resettled in a neighboring country, or they can be resettled in another country far away, usually a Western country. And I've racked my brain thinking there must be other options, but I can't come up with any. That's also the order of preference as to what should happen to refugees. Because if they can't go home, a neighboring country is probably best. Think of an African person who needs to flee his own country. If he could be resettled in a neighboring country, the cultural, linguistic, religious, climate, ethnic adjustment would be far less than if they were sent to New Zealand, Switzerland, or Canada. That's just a plain fact. Just like if Canada produced some refugees, the best place to go to, I think, would be the United States, so you may want to argue with that now. Countries always respond to refugees in different ways. If you listen to the news, you know that in Australia, when boats, and there are a lot of boats with refugees heading for Australia, they're not allowed to land in Australia. Refugees are kept on two islands in the South Pacific, and that's where they are held for processing. And this has caused a lot of confusion in how refugees are being handled. Thailand, in the decades of the Southeast Asian fighting, said we're a small country, half the size of BC, with 60 million people. We don't have room for any more people. We'll take them, but only on a temporary basis. Japan said, we're a small country. We're not going to take very many. but we will provide a water filtration system for a refugee camp. A tremendous contribution. The two Tibetan ladies that our church was part of sponsoring, and Travis was involved with this group, they're an example of refugees who fled Tibet following the Chinese takeover in 1950. They went to India. India is a very populous country. There are currently 100,000 Tibetans living in India. They are all stateless. Ken Friesen talked about Palestinians in Lebanon. Many of them live in tents. If you're living in a tent in a tropical country, that's okay. If you're living in one of the Arab countries, winter is coming, and a tent is not a good environment to be in. Canada needs over 100,000 immigrants and refugees a year just to maintain our population. The current government has set a target of 300,000. There's a reading in Leviticus. When an alien resides with you in your land, you shall not oppress the alien. The alien who resides with you shall be to you as a citizen among you. Now, that's a very demanding statement. You shall love the alien as yourself, for you are aliens in the land of Egypt. I am the Lord your God.
Great. We now invite Frida to share some words about her painting that's presented here in the world.
The hymn, If the War Goes On, the lyrics for that hymn were written by John Bell and Graham Maud in 1997, revised in 2002. The music was by John Bell. So I use those words to do my piece here. If the war goes on, will the children die of hunger? Will the old men weep because the young men are no more? Will the women learn to dance without a partner? And who will keep the score? If the war goes on and the truth is taken hostage and the call for peace and justice is declared unpatriotic, who will reveal those lies? If the war goes on and the rich increase their fortunes and new weapons are displayed and the arms sales soar and the fertile fields turn to no man's land tomorrow, who will approve that trade? If the war goes on and the voiceless poor take the road as refugees, and a nation's pride declares or destines millions to be homeless, who will heed their pleas? If the war goes on, will we close the gates to heaven or breach the gates of hell? If the war goes on, will we ever be forgiven if the war goes on? So we hear the words, we see the pictures, and what do we do about it?
'66 in the Green Book is the text and the song that Frida has just shared with us. let's sing it together. We will all sing where it says solo, if you will, please, and then the men and women on verses 2 and 3.
Around. You can ask me about them later, but I want to show you some pictures of refugee experiences. This is a boat that was landed off the southern coast of Thailand. It carried Vietnamese refugees into the South China Sea. They're aiming for either Thailand, Malaysia, Indonesia, almost anywhere. The problem with these boats are, first of all, they're disastrous boats ready for demolishment. They're overloaded because they're smugglers who are running this operation, and there's a shortage of food and water. In addition to that, in the background you can see fishing boats. Fishermen in the South China Sea found that if they pirated the refugee boats, they could make a lot more money than just them by catching fish. I remember chatting with one 15-year-old boy who had been thrown overboard, and he just swam behind, the ship was barely moving, and climbed back on. They threw him overboard again 5 times. They finally just let him stay on the ship. We've heard a lot about building walls. There are a lot of walls that we can build. Some of them are bamboo, which is a very hard substance that you can cut only with a hacksaw. Some are walls that currently exist in the southern states on the Mexican border. And those walls are interesting because they have gaps in them, where they can allow the Spanish asylum seekers to go through so that the people who want to catch them can focus on those areas. Bizarre strategy. But we need to think of the different kind of walls that are built. There are many different walls that can be built to keep refugees out. The kids. Kids are a problem in a refugee camp, and if you look at the kids in some countries, 50% of the people in a refugee camp are under 18 years of age. These kids generally have very little in the way of education and stimulation, so they keep busy doing whatever they can keep busy doing. This Cambodian girl was, someone put a flame tree flower in her hair. She was standing in front of a water tank playing in the water. You can see the moisture on her shirt. And the water tank, is the initials on there are COEER, Catholic Organization for Emergency Relief and Refugees. They provided the water tanks in the camp. This is at a northern refugee camp, and these are Hmong children. The Hmong are a hill tribe group from Laos who are basically slash-and-burn farmers, generally uneducated. And the history of their last 50 or 60 years is that there was a theory in the 1960s called the domino theory. If Vietnam fell to communism, then the other countries in the area, Thailand, Cambodia, Laos, Burma, would all fall to communism as well. So the Vietnamese War was designed to prevent that. Well, the CIA arranged with the Hmong that if they would fight against the Pathet Lao, the communist group in Laos, that would be great, and they would provide the arms and so on. If they lost, the Americans said, you can all come to live in the United States. So when we were in Asia in the late 80s, there were, at the camp we were at, there were as a training program for Hmong refugees. The Americans had quite a task. They had to teach them literacy in their own language and then teach them English. An enormous challenge. And the settlement in the U.S., Hmong settled mostly in Fresno, in Minnesota, and in one of the New England states. And they've since, of course, spread all over. It was simply a matter of coming across the Mekong and getting into Thailand to a refugee camp. And if I was put a caption on this, it would be, shall we cross the Mekong? Remember, it's 35 degrees or hotter every day, so they're dressed appropriately with a little bracelet around the ankle. Books are important for kids, and MCC has got many churches and books, and kids enjoy books even if they're reading them upside down. I don't know if this father is reading to himself or to his child, but it's also an indication of the windows in their buildings. There was no screens, no glass, and just bamboo lattice work. This is an example of another problem that refugees face. The boy in the pink or purple shirt had polio as a youngster and had difficulty walking. So you can see that the wheelchair is local technology. They were supposed to go to Canada, and it becomes a problem when people with health problems want to emigrate to Canada, because health is a provincial responsibility. So this family, for instance, was going to go to Alberta. It meant the Alberta Health Department had to agree to take them because this would be an expense to their health system. And to complicate matters further, their file got lost. Finally, Alberta agreed to accept them. And we visited them in Pincher Creek, Alberta, in the middle of nowhere, working on a pig farm, and they were happy. The boy had braces, he was going to school, there was hope. They'd since moved to Hamilton, and that boy is in a community college taking some sort of TV course. This is to show you the accommodation in the camp where we were. And you see there are three windows. It's basically a totally open building, three families, one for each window. And they could hang up blankets for privacy if they wanted to. Another example of refugee camp technology. That girl doesn't look very happy, but I don't know why. Fences serve many purposes, and wash lines are sometimes difficult to come by, so fences serve as wash lines. Food allocation is also a problem, because the camp we were at, I think refugees were allowed 1,200 calories a day. There weren't any fat refugees. And you got a certain amount of food. If that happened to be chicken's feet that you got that day, well, that's what you got. Here, fish is being dried on the fence. This is one of the camps near the Thai-Cambodian border. This was a camp with resistance fighters from Cambodia who were fighting against the Vietnamese regime in Cambodia. The food, rice, and you see the lady with the green sarong is carrying a tin can. That is cooking oil. That's their food allocation, which happened to be provided the day we were there. It's given to the women because the men are probably going to go fight and they'll take that food with them. And by giving it to the women, there's a hope that the women and children would get the food. That's the shower stall in the camp we were in. Carrying water. This is back to northern Thailand, to the Hmong refugee camp. I have no idea why these women are sitting there facing the wall. It boggles my mind. They're doing needlework, and they do a very creative needlework, and its patterns are very, very popular. And this is a mother and her child, and again, it's very hot, but this is how they dress. And you can see the different style of accommodation, bamboo huts with straw roofs. And a straw roof is an advantage because air can circulate through the straw. Tin roofs are disastrously hot. Refugees, especially refugees from Vietnam, are often Catholic, and they would celebrate Christmas. And sometimes they would have their own churches. This is in a refugee camp, but I brought that picture because the pump the lady is working is called a roller pump, and it was invented by a Canadian, George Clausen, who currently lives in Carmen, Manitoba. George was an engineer, and he was sent to Bangladesh and told, do something about irrigation. And he realized that in a lot of places in Bangladesh, they could only get one crop of rice a year because they couldn't get water. So he developed a roller pump, and I was intrigued to find that in northern Thailand. And the roller pump enables them to use manual labor to move water from one level to another, and it's made essentially, aside from a PVC pipe, with local technology. George refused to patent it because he wanted it used widely, and it is used widely. And George received a major financial award from a British foundation for the invention, which he turned over to MCC. That's the picture of the refugees from our camp when they were leaving for Canada. Cardboard box, plastic, twine. Now, it's interesting, because when I look at the pictures of Syrians coming, many of them have suitcases, which indicates that they had some money to buy some things. These are not refugees, as far as I know. rice is a big factor in Asia. This lady's job is to carry the seedlings that have just pulled out of the water to the people at the back who are planting the rice. And they stand in probably 4 to 6 inches of water all day, bend over, planting rice. There are rats and snakes that live in the water. It's a very difficult job, and that is an extremely heavy load she is carrying. I picked it up, and I was not amused. This is a UN poster. You're not to blame if a man becomes a refugee. You are if he continues to be one. That's it.